left off last week, we were talking a little bit about the prohibition of Stamiena. We mentioned that Chazal prohibited wine that was touched, handled, or manufactured by non-Jews for two different reasons. One was because of the general list of Mishum Benoseh, Mishum Chasnus, similar to what we spoke about in terms of Pas, Bishul, one-time Shemin maybe. And then in addition, there was this concern of Avodah Zarah, that less than non-Jews actually poured this wine to an idol, which would, if that would be the case, that would be also in a Torah, but again, we have probably very little reason in a Torah to suspect that's actually what happened. But the combination of these two factors, the question is whether both of these factors apply to Zman Hazeh. So we mentioned at the very end of the Shia that the Ramah quotes a big kula, that maybe the Avodah Zarah part doesn't apply to Zman Hazeh. If that would be so, then the Issur Hanah, the prohibition against benefiting from the wine, would also fall by the wayside of Zman Hazeh. That's a question, how far we're willing to make on that. So, the Ramah presents that as a kula of Shas Echad, as Bokham Hefzed, and others maybe want to extend it. Even if they're not Bokham Hefzed, so this is the Shailah, Omer al Perak, not that long from now, when a lot of people get these trade for bottles of wine from co-workers, and they want to pass it over to the next co-worker. So if the next co-worker was Jewish, you shouldn't be doing that. But if the next co-worker is a non-Jew, and you want to give it to them, so that's back to the Shailah of Nisra Hanah. Generally, there's a prohibition to give a gift of something that's prohibited by Hanah. Because when I give you a gift, so you're going to feel a certain degree of gratitude, a certain degree of responsibility back to me. So you may do something in return, even though nothing's necessarily spelled out that way. So that's pretty clear in the Gemara that just stop giving a gift is a violation of Hanah. So if this wine is really Asav Hanah, then one should not be giving it to even to a non-Jewish worker. One could just leave it in a Mokum Hefker, assuming no one's going to know that you left it there. If people know you left it there, they're very appreciative for leaving you their $500 bottle. That's going to defeat the purpose. But if nobody knows you left it there, and there's no concern that a Jew may take it, you're the only Jew in the office, so then maybe, you know, that would probably be okay. But short of that, so if one wants to make a legame bisman is there, that all the trade for wine is mutabar, you can give it to a non-Jewish colleague. But if you want to be choshesh, that maybe that kula was reserved only for shesed chak circumstances, so then one should probably try to avoid it. Let's say somebody asked me, Shaila, they were involved in a very serious, very expensive business deal, and they knew that the person they were dealing with was a wine connoisseur. They were told that the good way to seal the deal was to bring a very, very expensive bottle of wine. So they wanted to know, can they bring an expensive bottle of non-kosher wine, non-Jew? So me and my great wisdom of the wine industry suggested, what about, you know, some nice kosher bottle of wine? I'm sure there are some that are at least worth $20, $30 if I do the trick. So they said, you can go to the best wine store, the best kosher wine store, go pick the best wine. It's not even in the ballpark. It's like, you have to know the league that you're playing in. I think I've told the story in the past when my wife was trying to ask me about a certain basketball player on the white team, you know, how does he rank up to someone in the NBA? And I wasn't like, you know, I'm not holding in the nuances. So I tried to give her a marshal so she can appreciate. I said, it's kind of, remember PAL, like where the kids played? So it's kind of like Willie Mays and PAL, something like that. Like, that's kind of like what the marshal is. So that's the wine that's going to do the trick in the business world. It's not the bubbly, the bubbly Joy Vin for $9.50 in the wine store. Okay, so you gotta know your wine store. Don't know your wines, whatever it is. Anyway, bottom line is that for sure we don't drink the wine. That's the non-kosher wine. That's for sure also. I should say absolutely for sure. That's the Lutaskin. Clearly, that's also that there's no hetter b'shtiyah whatsoever, because even if the Avodah Zarah part is over, the chasas part is still alive and well. And therefore, under no circumstances can one be drinking the treif wine. Again, whether or not it's mutabar no will depend on this story. When I told that fellow was, I said, it's not a lechatchila not to do it. So he said, okay, he was going to be Moshe Nefesh, and I never asked him afterwards whether he was Matzlech, and I don't think he wanted to tell me whether the deal went through or not. But lechatchila, I'm going to try to avoid, using the treif wine. The Gemara tells us in the second part of Avodah Zarah that there is a fairly simple thing that can be done to avoid this entire problem of non-Jewish wine, and that is if the wine is mavushal. Let's say you have Jewish wine, and the Jewish wine was cooked up before the non-Jew came anywhere near it, so then any touching, handling of the wine will not pose a problem. It's the kula of yain mavushal. It's not clear why that's so. Why exactly did Chazal build in this kula? The Gemara says they did, but it's not clear exactly why they did. So there are some Hashem who say that cooked wine is such a milsa lo shchicha. It's so crazy, what was sugar, go ahead and cook his wine. So it's such a milsa lo shchicha lo gozo barabonim. So Chum never made the gezeira, it's such a sugar, like a wild kind of wine. Others say that maybe just some of the reasons don't apply. the Megvusha wine is a lower level kind of a wine, a more cheapy kind of a wine, and therefore the Goyim are not going to pour it to their idols. Even they have standards what they use for their Avodah Zarah, and you're probably not going to get invited for a meal. You're not going to be have too much socialization over the cheapy bottle of Megvusha wine, and therefore maybe some of the reasons don't apply. So again, whether we understand exactly where Chazal made this kula, or whether we're guessing where Chazal made the kula, not Chazal made the kula. So we don't have to be more mamach than Chazal. So the halacha is that Yam Avusha was not subject to subsequent touching by non-Jews. However, there is a big, big question, a very, very big, a controversial issue that's still raging on Yam Azeh, as to how exactly we define, what do the words Avusha mean when we say something is cooked. So Moshe Feinstein had a famous shuva about this, where he writes that Avusha means what it means in other areas of halacha. So what does it mean in other areas of halacha? You take a liquid and you cook it up on Shabbos. So we just spent 3 years learning about Shabbos sugya. So you got to remember back from the beginning. So once you cook a liquid to the point of yatsa lettuce boat, it's so hot that you pull your hand away. So that's considered to be already bishul in the areas of Ilchus Shabbos. So Moshe said that's the same thing with Ilchus bishul yayin as well. Once the wine has been heated up to the point of yatsa lettuce boat, so that's automatically considered to be bishul, and any concern subsequently would not be a problem. How hot is yatsa lettuce boat? So it's hard to do the experiment because, first of all, you don't want to burn your hand, and number two is that there's a bachlekes aposkim about how do you reckon this? How do you make a chesh with yatsa lettuce boat? Is it for the person who's not expecting the liquid to be hot, or is it for the person who is expecting? So if you do, I wouldn't recommend this at home, especially not with your kids. But in theory, you could keep your hand in water hotter. If you're expecting to go in, you're expecting to have a good hot cup of water. I mean, if it's 200 degrees, you're going to burn your hands, you can pull it out. But if it's 120, whatever it is, if you know that you're expecting to put your hand in hot water, you're not going to pull it out so fast. Whereas if you thought it's a cold cup of water and you put your hands in, your knee-jerk reaction, your nerves are going to pull it away right away. So even the way to test the yatsa lettuce boat is not 100% clear. Can you test yatsa lettuce boat with who's going to be the guinea pig? Is the guinea pig someone who knows he's a guinea pig or someone who doesn't know? I'll leave it to you to think about the mitos tovos involved in that experiment for the person who doesn't know they're going to be the guinea pig. The other part of the experiment is definitely should not be tried. With your shaman toast about kreiso shaltino gnichves, the baby's skin is very, very sensitive. So whereas in adults, you know, his nerve endings on his fingertips will pull his hands away, but he's not going to suffer any burns. Chalila, the baby can suffer real burns from that water, so obviously one should not attempt that kind of experiment either. So it's not 100% clear how do you even reach the magic number of yatsa lettuce boat. So there was a fascinating experiment that was done. It sounds very strange. I'll tell you quickly what it was, and then I'll try to explain to you the background of it. It involved ducks that had the flu. You might wonder, ducks that had the flu, what is the rabbi talking about? So the Gemara in the Yidimus HaSchulun talks about the base of Shechita, about when you shecht an animal, you shecht a bird. So that area, if you ever seen a Shechita, actually gets a little steam, it gets a little bit warm. The friction, I'm not exactly sure what, but it gets, there's a little steam that gets actually warm, that area. So the Gemara has a whole discussion about whether the base of Shechita, halachically, is considered to be Roseach or not. So it could be that the final word of that sug is that the base of Shechita is not really Roseach. When you shecht an animal, shecht the bird, so you don't have to be concerned that that area is too hot. That's enough Kabina Ladina. Let's say by mistake you use the treifa knife. So if you use the treifa knife, or their blias, which is their absorption from the knife into the animal, or the martos the other way around, you shecht an animal, the animal turns out to be treifa. So now that some of the blias of the animal get into the knife. So that's all pilpul in the first Perek Chulin about whether that's a concern. So the halacha, we assume that the Beis HaShechita never really reaches that point. So the experts in the field have told us that Chazal said it across the board. They don't say the distinctions. They don't say that, well, some animals, yes, some animals don't. Hilchasa, that doesn't reach out, so let us go. So it happens to be that the kosher species that has the highest natural body temperature is a duck. Go figure. The duck has a higher body temperature. And when a duck gets sick, ducks have the flu, so it gets temperature goes up 1 or 2 degrees, like everybody else. So the warmest that the duck could possibly get is X, whatever X is. So you know that number must be beneath the point of yatsa lettuce boat. That was part of the experiment. So they're sitting around Yerushalayim, shechting, going to the duck hospital, to the veterinary, trying to get a sick duck, and then trying to shecht the duck and see how hot you can imagine you're going to get different answers exactly as to what yatsa lettuce boat is. Anyway, the numbers go really, really across the spectrum. So those who worked with the duck experiments were working with much, much lower numbers of yatsa lettuce boat. Ramesh and Lori side, they weren't shechting ducks. They weren't testing temperatures. Ramesh was using other kinds of ways ways to figure out. Rashi said he thinks that once you reach the point of 160 degrees, you can be pretty certain that you've reached Yatzel Ezbo. Moshe didn't say that's the magic number. He says, once you're 160, you're Yatzel Ezbo. So other people can say, if you're 160, you're in the emergency room already for burns. He said, it's much, much lower than 160. Moshe, you don't have proof of Moshe that it has to be 160 degrees. Then you can say for certain that it's Yatzel Ezbo. So that's what many wine companies had to practice, that they try to heat up the wine to that point, and that way they can be certain that they've reached the Shia of Yatzel Ezbo. There are others who said it has to go higher, 180, I think. I don't want to say this, I can say it publicly, because I'm saying, I'm not sure what the facts are. I think that Kedem heats the wine to 180. Anyone know any yes or no about that? I think that that's what they're practicing, but I can't say that for certain. So that whole mahalach of declaring that wine is considered to be mevushal is going with that idea that as long as it's Yatzel Ezbo, that's fine. How long does it have to reach Yatzel Ezbo? It goes up, it hits Yatzel Ezbo for a second and shine. Now in the wine business, they don't want it to sit for too long because there's a reason why mevushal is not so good, because it's not so good. So we don't want it to be we were walking a tightrope. For halachic reasons, we want it to be classified as mevushal, but for wine reasons, we don't want it to be mevushal. We don't want to pour wine into a pot and have to sit for 2 weeks boiling up. So there's a whole system in factories today that they heat up the wine very, very quickly. It's a system, they run the wine over some metal, hot metal or something, and they heat it up for a split second, it reaches X point, whatever magic number X point is, and then it's immediately cooled down and shut. So it's mevushal, but to the best of their ability, they don't totally ruin the wine. That's what happens today. So this was going the ikvas Ramosha's idea that once it's just a lettuce bow and a split second, everything is shown by Israel. So other Gedolia Poskim didn't think that was right. Other Gedolia Poskim thought that Yai Mavushal has to really cause a deterioration in the wine. Cook it up for us. Mashu a second. So that doesn't really accomplish the solution. The point was to ruin the wine a little bit, to make it Mosulashlicha, to make it a lower level wine. No one's pouring it over the Zohar, no one's inviting you for dinner over it. So that was the view of Reb Shlomo Zalman. Several Poskim there as well. I think Reb Yashiv, if I'm not mistaken, also subscribed to this view. But this was Reb Shlomo Zalman's understanding that what today colloquially called Mavushal is not really Mavushal. So it doesn't really meet the criteria of Mavushal, which would be a tremendous chumrah, which would mean that when you buy that bottle of Mavushal, and you're not a Jew, pours it for you, so that's treif wine. So if you go down that route. In America, to the best of my knowledge, nobody is really machmir for that view. In America, all the kashrus organizations assume otherwise. You have a regular wedding in America today, there are non-Jews who will pour the wine for you. As long as the wine is mavushal, according to the Ramosha standards, that's accepted. I don't know of any hashkacha. Anyone disagree with this? I don't know you don't disagree, okay? I think that all the hashkacha is from the most Hasidish to the most whatever, the other end of the spectrum. I think everybody says the same thing in America, that they assume that that's considered to be yayin mavushal. And Eretz Yisrael, yesh v'yesh. What's the practice of Ramat Yishemesh? Eretz Yisrael, so a lot of the Baalim don't say Mavushal on them because they don't want to get involved in this Shaila. But the truth is that a lot of them are Mavushal. A lot of the Israeli wines really are Mavushal, even the ones that don't say Mavushal on them. The reason why they don't want to write Mavushal on the wine is because, according to Shlomo Zalman, those who pass like Shlomo Zalman, it's not Mavushal, so they don't get involved in it. Again, it's obviously much less of an issue in Eretz Yisrael, dealing with depending on what you issue, what you believe about people who are not from, what their status is vis-a-vis the wines. It's a lot of talk, we'll get to that in a minute. But if you're dealing with just non-Jews, obviously it's a significantly less of an issue in Eretz Yisrael. Not a non-existent issue, but definitely a less of an issue. Sometimes you have a strange thing. You can have the same bottle of wine, same company, that the bottle will say Mavushal on some and not on the other. So the reason for that is that the wines that were made to be sold in Eretz Yisrael will not say Mavushal. The wines that were for export will say it was the exact same wine. But the American, the ones that are being shipped to America will say Mavushal. And some of you may remember the story about the Mayapas Bris. See some of the newcomers that may have hear that story. So when my wife was pregnant with Mayakov, so we were in Eretz Yisrael for a little while to visit. And one of our uncles, who subsequently passed away, one of our uncles, so he was a Sephardi, my mother-in-law's aside. And when we came to visit him, we told him what we were expecting. So he hands us a big bottle of wine to take back for the bris. You say, we didn't know yet we're having a boy, but it's certain people have certain minds. They say, for the Brit, can't get a Brit. Anybody else? And he promised us it's going to be a Brit. And he's right. I mean, he's ready 50% of the time. So we brought back this big bottle of wine for the Brits. And the night before the Brits, I realized that the wine didn't say Mavushal on it. Okay, you know, there's nothing trafe about Mavushal wine. Not Mavushal wine, just make sure Goyim don't touch it. So I brought it to the Brits and felt, you know, we'd schlepped it from Eretz Yisrael. So I opened it, we opened it at Mamish by the Rabbi Katz, it's in the Rabbi Shalom, it was the well done. So I remember she opened it up on the spot, and he poured the wine and shook. And I said, what are we going to do with this wine now? We'll leave it around. I said, no, we'll take it, we'll use it for benching, for the meal. And then I just realized, wait a second. I said, there are a couple of non-Jewish waiters who are walking around. So I handed it off to my trusted friend, Rabbi Rapp Shlita, at the time. Always good for good entertainment. I handed it off to Rabbi Rapp. And I said, just hold on to the wine. Just keep an eye on the wine. Don't touch the wine. So we sat down. We had one non-Jew we invited to the bris. It was Tova's babysitter from Washington Heights, Rabina. Those are the old Heights people. So she came, and she didn't know so many people, but she knew Rabbi Rapp. So she sat down right next to him. So she was there, and I remember Rabbi Rapp was sitting, puts the bottle on this. He said, don't worry. Totally on top of the situation. So we held on to the bottle of wine. We used the wine for the bench. I remember we brought it home, and then we used it, whatever it was, and then we threw out the remains of it. Then I found out about a week later that particular wine company was actually Mavushal. The only reason why it doesn't say Mavushal is because they don't want to write Mavushal on the wine bottles that are sold in Eretz Yisrael. And this wine was, I got it in Eretz Yisrael. If it would have been the exact same wine, I would have brought in the wine still here, so it would have said Mavushal on it. So all's well that ends well. It was really Mavushal. Anyway, so I strongly recommend that people should use, if you have going in your house at all, any shape or form, strongly recommend that you should have Mavushal wine around. If you have no going ever come into your house for anything, so then, because then you want to use non-Mavushal, that's fine. But otherwise, if you want to use non-Mavushal, make sure to open it and use it right away on the spot. Don't leave it in the fridge, don't leave it around, because I'm telling you, inevitably someone's going to, you're going to end up in a situation where the non-Jew is alone in the house with the wine, which is going to run into problems. The non-Jew may have it, open up the refrigerator, whatever it is, and then you're going to call me with the shilas. I'm telling you, if you have going in the house, please don't have open non-Mavushal wines around. There is a question that I alluded to before about what's the status of somebody who is Jewish, but there's someone who al pi halacha is considered back in Machal Shabbos for Hesia. So the Gemara says in the beginning of Maseches Chulin that there's a status that's called the Mumu Machal Tarkul. Somebody is born Jewish, they have Kedushas Yisrael, the Makadash Anisha, she's still a Kedushas, but like in many areas of halacha, they are treated ka'akum, they're treated like a non-Jew. So the Gemara says, for example, Hilcha Shechita. If someone was a mumah l'cholot arakula, shech tenam, if you're not allowed to eat that animal, according to many, that would be an issa deraisa, a shayla, whether it's a deraisa derabanan, but l'maisi, you're not allowed to eat that animal. The Gemara has it, like, it's Erev and other details in halacha. So the Rashba writes that the same is true when it comes to yayin. A mumah l'cholot arakula touches wine, that's like a treif up the wine. The question is, how do you define what's called a mumah l'cholot arakula? So the Gemara gives a few examples. One example is if he's mamash a mumah l'cholot arakula, if he doesn't observe anything, that's a mumah l'cholot arakula. Or even if he does observe a lot of mitzvahs, but he's an Ovid Avodah Zarah. So he comes to Shul with some film, but he's Ovid Avodah Zarah also. So the Gemara says they can't have that. That was earlier, Novi told him, you can't have both sides of the story. So if a person is an Ovid Avodah Zarah, he's a Mumah L'Chol HaTarakula. And then the Gemara says if a person is Machal Shabbos, if a Hesi publicly does great Shabbos, he's also considered to be a Mumah L'Chol HaTarakula. So according to the Rashba, if such a person touches wine, that could pose a problem. The question is, how does that play out for Rosh Bezmanazeh? Is that halacha really relevant for Rosh Bezmanazeh? So there is a Rashi, Rashi says that the only reason why someone becomes a mumah from the Mechal Shabbos is because they're a kofar and ma'aseh breishis. It's not the aveira that makes you a mumah chotakul. There are a lot of aveiras of skila. Every aveira you do of skila doesn't make you a mumah chotakul. You don't trade off wine. You do other of skila. But you do trade off wine if you're Mechal Shabbos. What's the difference? Rashi says because Mechal Shabbos is a kofer. He's a kofer by Hashem. He's a kofer b'riyas ha'olam. So that's mamshtei avodah zarah. Avodah zarah is a kofer, the yichud Hashem, and your Mechal Shabbos. That's your kofer, the ma'aseh breishis. That's like your kofer, your b'riyas ha'olam. So that's what the famous tshuva, we've talked about the tshuva many times, Erech Laner has a famous tshuva where he suggests that what would the din be if you have someone who, we know he's not a kofer, but he's a Mechal Shabbos. We know he believes in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but he even believes in Shabbos, but he's still Mechal Shabbos. He goes to work because he needs to make a parnasa. So the Aruch HaNeir is a famous kula, but he thinks that It's a terrible thing. We're not condoning working on Shabbos. Think you can work on Saturday, that's not working on Shabbos. But to say you're working on Shabbos for Hesia, because because you can't control your terrible need for Parnassah. So we're not going to call you working on Shabbos for Hesia. The guy makes kiddush in front of him. His wife benches left, they have a city Shabbos, and he goes to work Saturday morning. So what are you doing? Terrible, terrible thing. But that's not a Machal Shabbos for Hesia Mamish to be a Dino Kimumer. Oda Lachadi, if a person is a Machal Shabbos, but not quite good for Hesia. What does that mean? So the Gemara tells us in Maseches Erev and a story about there was an individual who was carrying on Shabbos, there was no Erev, and everybody saw him carrying. He knew the Shabbos, he was not allowed to be doing this, and then he saw the rabbi. He saw Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, that's his grandson. He saw Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya from across the street, so he quickly stuffed the thing into his pocket that the rabbi shouldn't see him carrying. So Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya saw that, so Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya told the Shabbos, oh, that fellow's not a Machal Shabbos for Hesia. Why it's not for Hesia? For Hesia means he has no hesitations, no embarrassment, no nothing. He just, for Abba Eid, he's Machal Shabbos, with no apologies to anybody. That's a Machal Shabbos for Hesia. Guy's afraid, he's embarrassed. He's embarrassed by the rabbi, he's embarrassed by his family members, embarrassed by a co-worker. He does it quietly. The guy drives on Shabbos, but he doesn't park in the shul driveway. He parks around the corner. He parks somewhere else. He doesn't have inside job. He parks, he has a little bit of bush. He doesn't want everybody to see him drive up to the front of the shul on Shabbos. So that's considered, that's important. That's considered to be an Einam Chol Shabbos for Hesia, because he has a little bit of hesitation in what he does. You have a lot of individuals who are quote unquote Machal Shabbos, but they don't know any better. They're all Tinuk Shanishpas, they never heard of Shabbos. So it's hard to say such a person is a Kaiser, right? Maybe he is a Kaiser, I don't know. But it's hard to give us a rule that any person today who didn't grow up from is automatically a Mumor, a Dinuk Akram. So it's hard to make such a statement. So what we try to do is follow. So again, I strongly recommend that people should have Mavusha wine around the house, not to have open bottles made of Mavusha wine around. If you have real non-Jews around, for sure. If you have people who are really, really not Shomer Torah Mitzvahs at all, it's also a very good idea. You want to be the Eved, what will happen? A non-firm relative touches the bottle of wine. So it's just case by case to figure out, is this a Tinuk Shanishpas, is it not a Tinuk Shanishpas, as you know, is he embarrassed? We don't want to deal with those shavas, so avoid those shavas. When you have those kind of scenarios, try to make sure only to use the Mavusha. Why do people like not Mavusha wine? Why do people running around with not Mavusha wine? Two reasons. First of all, the experts say it's better. Yeah, and number two, there is a little bit of a mile going to some of using it for certain mitzvahs, say for Kiddush. So the Gemara's old discussion in Maseches Baba Basra. What's it doing in Baba Basra? Because the Baba Basra is talking about selling wine, all the halachas that govern the selling of wine. Selling wine, it turns to be vinegar, all the dinim lovers involved in sales of wine. So when the Gemara stuck in Tublat about the dinim of Kiddush, so the Gemara has a cloud that you can't make Kiddush on all wine, you have to make Kiddush on wine. That's royal and asach and gabi mizbeach. Wine that could be poured on the mizbeach for part of the karbonos, seder karbonos, that kind of wine is kosher for kiddush. So it's a big machlekes rishonim what exactly that means. So some rishonim say that means if it's yayin mevushal, which can't be used for the seder avoy, that it can't be used for kiddush. That's the Rambam sheet, and not everyone agrees to that. So our minig is lahakol that we make kiddush on yayin mevushal. I make it every Friday night. I make kiddush on yayin mevushal. But there are some who disagree. Some rishonim say that you shouldn't do that. So the poskim write that if you have two bottles of wine in front of you, one's mevushal, one's not mevushal, it's better to make kiddush on the end of mevushal. So Shmashab's Kuchasa writes that the reason why you're keeping by using the animal, they're using the mevushal is to avoid kashrus shailas. So that's more important than this hidur that maybe according to the Rambam you should use the non mevushal. In the greater scheme of halachic concerns, that pales to ending up a tray for wine floating around the house. So therefore, I stick to my guns that if there's nothing at all to be worried about. No one's coming to your house at zero. You want to be machter and use only the non-mevushal wine. So you want to, you have any concerns whatsoever, like probably most of us do have non-Jews and once in a while floating around the houses. So therefore, I think it's the safer of the two options is to go with the mevushal ones. There are some who like to have the extra hidup at the Leil HaSeder. It's nothing really special about that. The Pesach is very special, but not about this. It's the same as any other Friday night. There are some who like to be machmir to make dafka on the good news is if a shomer almond is accepted, so then all our wine is enem mevushal. So it's great. The bad news is that it's all treif. So yeah, you can pick and choose. Okay, any other questions about wine?
Does one have to be concerned if yayin mevushal now becomes the prevalent wine?
Right, so that's the question. This is the general question about dinim d'rabbanan when you have what's called a milsad lo shchich and lo gozer d'rabbanan. Chazal made gezeiros addressing certain norms that existed then. We're not mechuyf to make new gezeiros. We haven't had a beis d'agol for quite some time. If you come Friday nights, we'll talk a little bit more when the beis d'agolos come back. We had some inside info, I tell you. But right now, the gezeir that was formed by Chazal excluded Yaim and Moshe, so we're not mechuyf to make no gezeirs, even though it's true that the norm has become probably, at least in from circles, to have Yaim and Moshe. Right?
I think the church is the biggest fire.
The what?
I think the church is the biggest fire.
Because they're choishesh, they're afraid the Jews poured it somewhere. So, you know? Okay. So up until now, we've been talking about wine. So we're not going to talk too much about other beverages around here, especially about Nara Torah, but we'll just make very, very quick a reference.
Is there any way to adequately reseal?
Yeah, you could. The best thing, I haven't seen them in a long time, they used to have those locks. They used to have those combination locks. You could, like, Shabbos locks. You could stick it into the bottle of wine, and there's something that only you know the combination, so the non-Jew can't open it up. Those are great. Has anyone seen them recently? Those locks on the bottles of wine? I asked around a few times with some of the wine guys here, and they said they stopped selling them.
Why can't you do kashrus?
I mean, every time you start to cape it up, your 100. Yeah, you can. Make base chasam. I mean, you know, Friday night, you're not really. What? Yeah. Okay. The Gemara in the Sefer Bevah of the Zohar speaks about the Sheikhar Acham, about the beer that was produced by non-Jews. So here the Gemara says there could sometimes be a problem, but significantly less than wine. There is sometimes a kashrus issue of beer, so that's a modern day issue. So you have to figure out, is there a kashrus issue or not? I am a great surprise. I am not an expert at which beers are problematic, which beers are not problematic in terms of that pure kashrus issue. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about. But then the Gemara says, even if the ingredients of the beer are kosher, but one shouldn't be drinking beer with b'shtos achon together in a very non-Jewish kind of a setting, in a non-Jewish home, sitting around and watching a football game and drinking the beer together. So that the Gemara says is prohibited. That's also part of the Gezeirah Chastos. So we don't want, that's a bit too close for comfort. But the Gemara says that beer is different than wine, and there's less of a concern when it comes to beer. And therefore, as I said, that as long as it's not being drunk together in the non-Jewish establishment, if you bring it to your house, then it's okay. So if you go to the non-Jew and you go to the non-Jewish store, you buy some can of beer, you bring it to your house. So again, from the pure vantage point, I'm not commenting, but the pure vantage point of the Chizkashos, if the beer is kosher, if the ingredients are kosher, whatever Kashos organization is either endorsing it literally or telling you on the side that this particular beer is okay, whatever the case may be. But if it's brought to your home, so then it would be okay. But to have the together in a non-Jewish kind of a setting, so that could potentially be a problem. There was a machlekes that we shown him. This touched a little bit on Josh's question. There was a machlekes that we shown him about whether maybe the beer that existed in the days of Chazal was different than the beer that we have today. So the truth is it was. Remember the Gemara's in the Enema Seches Pesachim. So the beer could be made from a lot of different ingredients. So in Bavli, they made date beer because they had a lot of date trees. They made date beer. If you're interested, you can go visit Choron. I don't know if anyone watched the Yeted, but on the front page of the Yeted this week, there was an article about Choron, like as a Yaakov Avinu, going to Choron, you know, the Chorona. So I didn't even realize we bought it for something else. I told my wife wrote her Shidduch thing, and it turns out it's the wrong week anyway. But so I'm looking at the picture. It said Choron, and it said an undeveloped town or something. I thought it was like some place in the Galilee called Choron that somebody decided to write. I can't say what's the front page of the Yeted. The Meir showed it to me. He says, no, it's an interview with the mayor of Choron. Choron's a town in southeast Turkey, right off the Turkey-Syria border or something, which is supposed to be Choron. They claim that it's been the name hasn't changed in 5,000 years. Again, then they share all the tourist attractions, you know what it's like. This is the well they happen to be doing. How do they know? This is the well, I'm telling you. For 100 shekels, 100 dinars, whatever it is, they'll take you inside the well of the Yaakov Avinu. So that was the whole article it was about. It was about Choron. So, I guess they must have been in Babel, that area. That wasn't really Babel, but that area of the world. A lot of date trees. So they used to make date beer. When they came to Europe, so there weren't that many date trees growing in Poland, so they used to make barley beer. So all the beer came from a barley. We spoke about this in the Chodeshurim. I forgot when we talked about this not that long ago. We mentioned that the Poskim writes, that the reason why they were so making on Yosh and Chodesh in Europe was because they needed beer. They didn't want anything to drink. The water was always was always polluted, and the wine was too expensive, and everyone just the standard drink was beer. The beer was coming from barley, so all the barley was chadash. So the Pesach was a big shasarcha. So in the days of the Rishon in Europe, they were drinking barley beer. They weren't drinking date beer. So one of the Rishon, the Mordechai, if I'm not mistaken, quotes an opinion that the tekezeh was only made on date beer. Never made on barley beer, and therefore everything's great. Similar to what Josh was raising before. And other Rishonim say it's only made on the was made on Sheikhar. So if today Sheikhar means this, and this is Sheikhar, this year, it's all the same thing, just a different source of how you made the Sheikhar, but it's all basically the same Sheikhar. So that's a question. So there are some who make it outright, and the whole thing doesn't apply with Manazel. Others say, no, we still have to be worried about this. So you shouldn't sit together with a bunch of non-Jews in a non-Jewish kind of establishment sitting around drinking beer. So there was a question that the later Poskim had, whether this gazeira was made only on beer, only on alcoholic kinds of beverages, that's like similar to wine, or maybe it was made in general. There's no drinking together in a non-Jewish drinking place, so maybe that's also not appropriate. That's considered to be too close for comfort if you're drinking other kinds of drinks as well. Having a soda, having a seltzer, having a bottle of water or something in a context of a non-Jewish establishment, would that pose a problem? So this was the big question that was, this is a big issue, a hot issue in terms of dating, about the lounges, about when you go to a lounge and you sit and you have a Coke together sitting in a lounge, so it's a non-Jewish lounge, so is that considered to be a violation of Mishtel's Akum, a violation of Sheikh or Akum? So the minig in the yeshiva world is to be made to the channel, but most people assume that's not considered to be a problem for a variety of reasons. One ha'ara, a fascinating ha'ara was made, is that many of the lounges may meet the requirement. The post can say, what if you have an area that most of the people there are Jewish? So most people there are Jewish on Thursday night in the Glen Point, so you get a lot of Jewish people there on that date night, so that may turn into a Mishnah Shal Yisrael, even though the establishment may be owned by Goyim. So it's food for thought, or food for drink for thought, whatever the case may be. The Olam seems to be a little more makeup about this, even though not everyone was so convinced that would be a problem. So let's move on now to a different topic in terms of Hilchos Kashrus. And if you've noticed, we haven't really spoke about kashrus per se. That may sound strange, but we haven't spoke about like trace animals, like that kind of stuff. We'll get there eventually. Eventually we'll get down the line to Bas B'chol and that kind of stuff further down the year. But I'm trying to almost like categorize all together the Hilchos Kashrus part of Maseches Avodah Zarah. The item that appear in Maseches Avodah Zarah, primarily in the Sechta, the next one is a little bit later in the Sechta, that deal with foods and drinks that we shouldn't be eating and drinking, but not because there's anything per se wrong with them in terms of kashrus. There's no nevelos, no trips, no bas b'cholov, no orla, no perishvias. There's no kashrus concerns per se, but they are more of a Jewish, non-Jewish relations kinds of concerns, which Chazal created a whole series of the Nisurim. There's the Bishlachim, the Pasachim, the Shevetachim, and the Stam Yenam, and the Mishnah Sachim, all these kinds of things, which are extended, have entered into the world of Kashrus. Lamaisi, can't eat these things. Lamaisi, these things are prohibited in the Rabbanan, even though the original engine that drove these things had nothing to do with Kashrus per se. So this leads us into an area that appears at the very end of Maseches Avodah Zarah, which again is not Kashrus proper, but it's always under the heading of Kashrus, and that's the Mitzvah Tfilas Kelim. So Tfilas Kelim is a Mishnah at the very end of Maseches Avodah Zarah, and in a certain sense it belongs with everything we've been talking about, because there's nothing treif with Kelim that we're not toveled yet. However, one is required to tovel them. And part of why you're toveling them, as the Rishalmi gives a mashal, the Rishalmi says, just as when you have a non-Jew wants to join Klal Yisrael, so it doesn't just happen like that. He has to go to the mikvah, he has to become nichas tachas tachas shechina. So too, when your pots and pans and your glasses and your silverware want to be used for Jewish consumption, so we consider our eating to be very, very special, we sit down at the table, mizbeach, so everything is kodesh, the way a Jew eats in a different way. Well, it's kashrus, it's predicated on that. Our eating is very, very important to us. I mean, that's sometimes too important to us. But the way we eat, the halacha looks, can you think about it, all the food that we eat ultimately makes ourselves up. All our cells, our whole body, everything we have comes from the food that we eat. So food is very, very important in terms of the role that it plays in halacha, obviously. So even if the kelim are technically not treif, the kelim themselves have to be in a salad, the kedusha. And that's what the Rishami says. The halacha gives us a mitzvah, tefillas kelim, to almost elevate us and to separate us. The kelim that at one time belonged to the non-Jews have to be in his kaddish, have to be in his gaya, to enter into Kedushas Yisrael. So again, is this Hilchos Kashrus proper? Not really. On the other hand, it isn't your Adechelik base, and it's clearly part of a kosher home. One wants to observe the minimum kashrus properly, so one has to make sure the Tfilas Kelim is being done properly as well. So the mitzvah Tfilas Kelim appears in the Mishnah at the very end, the last Mishnah in Maseches Avodah Zarah. It's funny because the context of the Mishnah is something that you would never think of as Zman HaZeh. Now, maybe in more Amazon days, maybe yes, but in the olden days, so it was very normal. A guy needed a pot. So you didn't necessarily make a new pot. You went to the market and you bought someone selling an old pot. So someone's getting old. I need a Sammy, go buy a used car. So I go buy a used pot. So the guy is selling me a pot. So the mission's good. Okay, kill him in the apple. So you're buying a used pot. So first of all, you have to cash the pot. That's kashrus. That's real kashrus. We'll talk about that later on also. And then the mission says, and by the way, after you finish kashrus here, matbilo, then you have to bring it to the mikvah. You have to tefillas kelim on it. Most of us don't do that. We usually buy used silver and used pots, but now sometimes you do. Sometimes there is such a thing, all right? People sometimes buy, there's also saying if I use the... Okay, I guess we don't. Okay, fine. So, bottom line is that most of us go to the store, we order on Amazon, we get our fresh pots, we get our new silver with everything. So the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah that, by the way, don't think that the din of Tefillas Kelim was only for the guy who bought the used pot. The Tefillas Kelim was for the guy who buys the new pot also. The Gemara is an interesting lumbus. The Gemara says because when you buy a used pot and you kasher it, so now it's a new pot, and still you have to do Tefillas Kelim on it. So what's the difference? Tefillas Kelim has nothing to do with kashers, so therefore there's no difference whether the guy used the pot or he just owned the pot. As long as the pot was owned by the non-Jew, there's a mitzvah of Tefillas Kelim. Where did that mitzvah come from? Those are psukim in the end of Sefer B'Midbar, Pashas Matos, when the Torah describes it, went out to fight the Midjanim, and they brought back all the pots and pans that they won in battle. So Elazar Cohen tells Klaisol, says, also Torah should see Hashem as Moshe, you have to follow the following dinim. Ach Zazov is a kosa called the Vashi Yavu Be'esh, you have to kasher everything, and then you have to also be toivel it in the mikvah. So the Gemara says, from here we derive, there's a mitzvah tefillas kelim. So it's not 100% clear whether the Gemara meant this is a real drasha d'oraisa or not. Since it's a controversial statement. So it's a big machlokes that we showed that the Gemara means Tefillas Kelim with mamish min haTorah, but the Gemara means it as smach. It's really fundamentally a mitzvah in the Rabbanan. And there'll be some nafkaminas ladina here and there. So hopefully mitzvah next week, we'll try to get into the nitty gritty part of the mitzvah Tefillas Kelim, starting off with the shaila, is are we really dealing with the Derais, we're dealing with the Rabbanan, what's some of the parameters of this thing.
Is anyone interested in the 1 p.m. intro to that here?